Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. This show is sponsored by Mark Drugs, who specialise in the custom compounding of medications, assuring that the client gets the proper prescriptions for their unique needs and conditions. They work with practitioners, integrating knowledge and treatment of experts to create comprehensive health plans. Visit markdrugs.com or call Roselle 630-529-3400 or Deerfield 847-419-9898. Today I'm joined by Dr. Yusuf Selabi. Thank you for joining us today, Yusuf.
Linda, it's good to be here again.
Yes, you've been our guest on the show before. We know that you are a great believer in LDN and prescriber. What has been happening in your practice since we last spoke?
Well, I practice in the southeastern coastal United States in South Carolina. We have our main office near Myrtle Beach and a second satellite office in Mount Pleasant. I'm not sure if that was open the last time we spoke, but we get a fair amount of inquiries with folks with autoimmune diseases of various types, everything from MS to ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. And most recently, last week, a woman was diagnosed with ALS, and I suspect it's not really the end diagnosis. I think she has a tick-borne pathogen that's causing symptoms. And I immediately placed this particular patient on LDN after our first visit. But we're still awaiting a lot of other confirmatory lab tests. Mm-hmm. But, we're continuing to, because we are a totally dedicated functional medicine practice, we are prescribing a lot of LDN. People are actually reaching out to us in the last couple of years specifically for LDN prescriptions. We also have relationships with several compounding pharmacies in the area, both in North and South Carolina, because we cover both states, with programs where if somebody comes into a compounding pharmacy seeking out LDN but does not have a prescriber that is knowledgeable or willing to prescribe, the pharmacists will give them our names and refer them to us. So we've had an influx of recent years, last couple of years, of more and more folks actually seeking LDN and VLDN and for a myriad of conditions. So that's sort of what's been going on in our little world here. And I'll talk a little later about what we're doing as far as the Priority Health Academy for teaching and spreading the word about LDN.
Mm-hmm. Just before you carry on, is Lyme disease a problem in your state, in North and South Carolina?
It is a problem in every state every 50 states in the U.S. Mm-hmm. It's a problem now. It's not just Lyme endemic areas. There are certain states that see more Lyme disease, like the northeastern United States, like New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut. But it's spread all over and internationally. I mean, if you look globally, studies are showing that you'll see it in Brazil, Argentina, you'll see it in China, the Netherlands, Germany. So I was recently in Belgium on a trip with my wife, and we were at this historic park, and there was a notice on the board in the museum having people be careful about ticks and Lyme disease. And this is in the middle of Belgium. And I thought, wow, I was amazed to see that they're recognizing this problem as a global epidemic, not just folks living in Lyme, Connecticut. So, yeah, we're making unique initial diagnosis of people who have never left the state of South Carolina that are showing up positive for both Lyme disease, the Borrelia, as well as the co-infections like Babesia, Bartonella, Ehrlichia. Mm-hmm. So it is a problem in the Southeast. It's not really recognized by most clinicians that are practicing here. Even infectious disease doctors don't want to touch it. Studying this disease, it breaks a lot of the traditional rules that we studied in medical school and residency about infectious disease. It's kind of a almost like a foreign language. You have to really dedicate yourself to understanding and studying this particular disease because it does break a lot of the, you know, typical rules.
Mm. It was funny. I went 5 years ago probably to my doctor's and I was waiting to have some blood taken, and in the waiting room there was a poster about Lyme disease, and I thought that was amazing that they were actually taking notice of Lyme disease. Next time I went, the poster had gone, and I said to the nurse, the poster has gone about Lyme disease. She said, yes, we took it down. There's no Lyme disease around here. And I thought, really? Is that so?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's very politicized, and that has really stepped in the way. It's a huge hurdle for research dollars to go into studying it. We know very little about good treatments. Even the International Lyme and Tick-Borne Society, ILADS, there's variety of different protocols for treating Lyme in the chronic phase. And it's very poorly researched, it's very poorly understood, and it's all over the place. Mm. So you go to five different practitioners and who understand Lyme, and you'll get five different or six or seven different protocols to follow. So if there was more research dollars put into the system to research it, we would be able to narrow down the protocols that really work and throw out the ones that don't. But again, politics seems to stand in the way.
So for people listening, and it's quite a scary thing to think you could be taking a walk in nature and suddenly, you know, have a tick bite. Is there anything we can do to try and protect ourselves against ticks?
Yeah, certainly. If you are out in nature, and I really encourage my patients to get out in nature and take a sort of a digital break from social media and their cell phones and their computers and actually go outside and exercise outside instead of in a like a gymnasium that has artificial light. Mm. Very important to do so. When you're finished, you need to do a tick check. Have your mate, your companion do a full body tick check on you. The other day, my wife and I were kayaking in the low country, and she noticed a little red bug on her forearm, and it was a tick. So it can happen. They're sometimes very tiny, and you don't notice them, especially in places you can't see yourself. So sometimes you need a fellow partner to do this. The screening for you, the tick check. So other things are brightly colored clothing. So you'll more likely spot a tick if you wear something white as opposed to a dark color. The other thing you can do if you're walking in high grass, you pull the socks over the bottoms of your pants if you're wearing long pants, and that keeps the little critters from crawling up on the inside of your pants. Other things you can use is natural repellents. There are some products that are used natural agents to repel insects, not only ticks, but mosquitoes and fleas and other arthropods. And you can also use DEET. DEET is a chemical. You have to be careful with that. There are also some clothing that are impregnated with permethrin. So it comes, you can wear the same garment multiple times, like 10 times, and wash it, and it still has the active agent within the material woven in. But so those are some key things to be aware of when you're out in the woods. Mm-hmm. And the statistics show that most people don't realize they've been bitten. These little critters will crawl up from your shoes to your legs and kind of lodge in your groin area or under the armpit or axilla. They'll also hide in the back of the nape of the neck, and they can feed on you for a couple hours or even 2 or 3 days and then fall off, and you don't realize you've been bitten. And the heralding sign of a bullseye lesion is only present in about 30% of people who will contract acute Lyme.
So it is really scary, isn't it? Because it means you can be bitten and you don't know. You've got a tick, the tick could drop off, and then you wouldn't know.
Right. You wouldn't know until maybe months later when you start having symptoms. Mm. And it could be a myriad of symptoms. A lot of them are confused with other disorders. For instance, a lot of people come in with MS diagnosis, multiple sclerosis, people with fibromyalgia, people with all kinds of other autoimmune diseases. And when those diseases are identified, the kind of the workup stops there. So for instance, somebody who has, let's say, lupus or MS or ALS, the workup stops there, and then they're prescribed sometimes medications that are, could be even worse than the disorder itself. But in functional medicine, we obviously go deeper to find root cause. And sometimes we find that it is a tick-borne illness that's causing these symptoms, and we make a correct diagnosis, and then we can treat that patient. Usually at that point, it's chronic Lyme disease or late stage Lyme, which is a totally different animal than acute Lyme. Acute Lyme is really easy to treat. 60 days of doxycycline or a type of penicillin drug will usually eradicate it, and end of story, that's it, we're finished. But if it sets in as chronic Lyme, it's really a different way to treat, and it's really, really difficult to try to get it under control.
Mm. Yeah, not good. It really does put me off going out for walks in grass. But anyway, sure. Let's get back to you and your patients.
Sure. Just a word to end the discussion on Lyme is that LDN does have a place in Lyme disease in many of my patients. Not every single one, but a lot of them will benefit from low-dose naltrexone, whether it's for the pain states associated with some of the Borrelia and Bartonella that cause fairly excruciating pain, but also as an immune enhancer, because most of the people that are susceptible to the late-stage chronic Lyme disease are folks that have a really weakened or out of balance immune system, and LDN is used to put it back into balance. So I'm finding that that's a useful agent, and I usually rapidly accelerate their doses in a titration faster than just once 1 milligram every month to reach usually anywhere between 3 and 5 milligrams per day.
Mm-hmm.
We had talked about a case study, and I do have one recently within the last 6 months. Is a 52-year-old white female in relatively good health, no real medical issues except for a history of celiac disease, maybe even non-celiac gluten sensitivity more so, because some of her markers for celiac did come back negative. But also a long-standing 20-year history of ulcerative colitis. And she was doing fairly well with her diet to keep this at bay, but due to some unusual stressors at work and changes in her diet, she started presenting with a very large distended abdomen, real gassy and bloaty, and she was not really interested in going back on the traditional ulcerative colitis drugs. It was kind of sometimes a financial issue with her, because these drugs were expensive and she did not any longer have good insurance coverage to pay for these expensive drugs. So she presented to us, her husband actually was on LDN for Lyme. And so I was approached by her, and she was wondering if I would take her care on. And we did an intake on her, and we started her on LDN at 1 milligram per night. And within a few days, I get a phone call from her, and she says, "You're not going to believe this, but the bloating and gassy in my intestines and my stomach have improved like 90% just within the first few days." I thought that was a little kind of optimistic, but I'm like, okay, well, let's keep going with this. So we escalated her dose at about adding a milligram per month, and she's currently on about 3 milligrams per day, and she takes it in the evening, and she does well. She does not report any side effects from the LDN use, aside from more vivid dreams. That's about it, and they're not so bothersome for her, so she continues, and she's very compliant and adherent, and she looks, I saw her maybe a week ago, and she looks really good. She's less stressed out. Her belly is nice and flat. She doesn't complain of all the usual symptoms of IBD, ulcerative colitis. Those are at bay now. And she's not on any of the other traditionally prescribed medications for ulcerative colitis and irritable bowel disease that are used in conventional medicine. She's just on LDN.
Wow. I should think she's really pleased that she managed to find you.
Well, yeah, well, see, though, I was taking care of her husband for about a year before, and so she knew her husband was taking LDN, probably did not understand that, you know, it could be used for UC until she came into the office and we engaged in a conversation. And I said, well, you know, your husband's on this particular low-dose naltrexone, which would probably be very effective for you. You know, a quick review of the medical literature will show, you know, back in 2018, Dr. Bruce Vorman from Dartmouth did a review of LDN usage in a myriad of disorders and different doses. I think he discussed ultra-low dose naltrexone and very low dose and a low dose. And he kind of enumerated its uses in different disorders. But there's, I did a quick literature search recently, and I came up with a half dozen articles pertaining specifically to ulcerative colitis. Let's see, there were a couple of them, and starting in 2013, there was an article, and then two articles appeared in 2014, 2017, and two additional articles in 2018, all with positive findings, all with good correlations of improvement of symptom relief with the use of LDN in folks with ulcerative colitis. Two of those clinical trials or reports published were from Norway, and I think one or two of them were from the Netherlands. And so, you know, we're not seeing so much coming out of the U.S., but we are seeing a lot of publications in Europe, which are, you know, proponents of the use of LDN in inflammatory bowel disease.
Do you suggest that your patients alter their diet?
Well, yeah, well, that was obviously the first thing we did, since we identified the fact that she was known sensitivity to gluten and wheat, and she knew it too. And so if she cheats a little bit on her diet, she'll get more symptomatic. So we did, you know, encourage her to be more compliant with her diet. She's been doing that for over a decade anyway. But then with the implementation of LDN at even 1 milligram, her symptoms were relieved almost instantaneously. I mean, it was just quite amazing the change in her belly appearance of, you know, she almost looked gravid. She almost like she was 4 or 5 months pregnant when she first presented. If she mm-hmm. was that bloated. And this is a very thin woman who probably weighs 120 pounds. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, instantly her belly got flat. Mm-hmm. And I attribute that to the effects of the LDN.
It's amazing, isn't it? That somebody's stomach could go that flat.
Right. And that quickly. I was surprised, because I tell folks it's not really an immediate thing necessarily in many cases. It's sort of something you start to learn to appreciate after 2 or 3 or 4 months, especially with my Hashimoto's patients. Sometimes we see a little bit of a bump upwards in the TPO titers when we initially start. And I usually start them at very, you know, like lower, like 0.5 milligrams is what I usually start them on, or maybe even lower if they're sensitive to medications. And then we slowly escalate the dose. And I tell them, you know, don't expect a miraculous change in your TPO titers, you know, sometimes it takes 4 to 6 months. One of my patients in Charleston is an engineer, and being an engineer, she likes to put everything on Excel spreadsheets. So she plots everything out, and she plotted out some things over about a year and a half course, where at one point she ran out of her LDN, and this is a woman with Hashimoto's, and her, you could see her, while she was on it, her TPO titers started to drop on a steady downward slope. And then when she ran out and was without it for 3 months, her TPO titers spiked up again. So we put her back on. We made sure she was compliant. She had a visual affirmation that it was working because she plotted this out on a map, on a chart, and had all her Excel spreadsheets to prove that the LDN was working. And as soon as we put her back on it, her TPO titers started to drop. And she's on a natural desiccated thyroid replacement, and she's doing quite well. I can report as of last month, she's doing exceptionally well, and I believe she's engaged to be married soon. So she's going to be in good shape for her wedding.
It's funny because some people say to me, how long do I have to take LDN for? And as you've just pointed out, it only works while you take it. It doesn't fix things so that you don't have to take LDN anymore. It is, if you want it to continue working, it is a lifetime drug, isn't it?
Pretty much. I think that's the party line, and that's what I usually tell my patients. I said, well, you take it as long as you want to continue feeling well. Now, if you decide at some point in the future, after 2 years, you don't want to feel well, well, then stop taking it. And so I think they get the picture. There are only a few patients I have to take them off, or actually take them off and restart at a lower dose. And sometimes they use very low dose naltrexone just because of some of the symptoms they may report, GI upset, vivid dreams that are disturbing to them. And then sometimes I switch the dosing from nighttime dosing to daytime, knowing that that's going to be a little less effective, but at least we're getting it in them. And then making dosage adjustments. I'd still love to figure out what biomarker I can use or what sort of algorithm I can follow to figure out the optimal dose, because as we're escalating from, let's say, 1 to 4.5, 5, or even 6 milligrams, I'm using higher doses even on some patients. Sometimes the right dose for the patient is around 3 or 3.5 or 4. And sometimes it's at 2. So we've kind of gone up the ladder, and then we realize that, well, it's not as effective, or they're having some untoward effects. And so we bring it down, and we, you know, we hang out at 2 milligrams a day, and that seems to work perfect for them. So, but I wish there was some tool that we could use on a patient to kind of maybe predict better what's the right dose for them. Well, and that may be something in the future with research.
Well, when I was talking to Gerard Younger at the 2017 conference, he was saying that he was working with somebody to actually do a trial. I don't know if it was a blood test or some marker that they were using, which would show which was the correct dose for a person of LDN. So I'll have to reach out to him and see what happened with that, see if he managed to get right. that off the ground. Because, yes, it would be amazing to find out what is the optimal dose for somebody, even if you started on very micro doses and worked up to your ultimate. But it would be good to know, because it is trial and error, isn't it?
Probably a genetic marker, because we know there are some genetic markers out there for how people respond to naltrexone. And I think that was maybe utilized in people with the higher dose of 50 milligrams, or folks on Vivitrol injectable high dose naltrexone, to see if they would exact better effect on their opiate or alcohol abuse for detoxification and addiction medicine. But I don't know that there's anything really yet for the low-dose naltrexone. But it would be interesting. It would be a useful tool, certainly, and a time saver for our patients, too.
So we're rapidly running out of time. So Could you tell us, you know, how best to educate the public and healthcare practitioners about LDN?
Well, Linda, I think your organization is doing a great job with the documentaries and the symposiums and annual meetings. I think that's super important to spread the word. I am sort of mortified by the fact that doctors in the Southeast, North and South Carolina and Georgia, of where I tend to practice, have no idea that naltrexone even exists, even in the high dose. I mean, they're just unfamiliar with it, let alone LDN. And God forbid you ask them a question about ultra-low-dose naltrexone, they kind of scratch their head and run out of the room. So I think it's really important to continue pushing hard for education. And I think I was pleased to note that on September the 23rd of this year, my wife was listening to National Public Radio, NPR, which is a, you know, a public-funded national radio show. And lo and behold, they did a piece on LDN for chronic pain. And I got the audio clip and I reposted it on our blog. But essentially, there were some advocates. They mentioned Bruce Vorman's work. They mentioned a couple other researchers in the United States. And also they interviewed the CEO of Alkermes, which is the pharmaceutical company that holds the patent for the high-dose naltrexone. And they were asking him, is your pharmaceutical company going to investigate low-dose and ultra-low-dose naltrexone as therapeutics? And he said, not really. Right now, the patents don't permit that. There would be no incentive for Big Pharma to spend a lot of research dollars on looking at something that really is in its generic form and can't be probably given patent protection so they can make some money on it. So they're disincentivized to be doing that. And the advocates like you and I and many other folks that prescribe LDN, we're really kind of a little disappointed because we think that this is going to be kind of pushed back in the back burner on the fringes of medicine and not being brought to the forefront. So that along with some other things in dealing with cardiovascular disease, dealing with autoimmune disease and other things that frustrate functional medicine doctors because the conventional system, the big hospital systems don't embrace it. I took it upon myself to develop to create an academy. So in 2017, I started out with a small group, mostly of my own practitioners in my practice, nurse practitioners and PAs, in educating them. So it was like an in-house educational seminar that I put on once a year. Well, we had some interest in outside providers wanting to partake. So we grew it in 2018, and we had 12 plus attendees. This year in 2019, we had 26. We advertised 20 seats, but we couldn't refuse anyone. So we opened it up and had 26 people attend. Next year, we're doing it again. In mid-July of 2020, we're opening it up to 50-plus attendees, all healthcare practitioners and providers and some health coaches. And we're making it a little bit more formal. We're applying for a nonprofit designation, 501c3 designation for nonprofit. And it is definitely a dedicated academy for teaching. LDN is certainly on the schedule every year for lectures, as well as other functional medicine topics like gut health and nutrition, acupuncture, energy medicine. This coming year's focus will be on provider burnout. In other words, we're seeing tremendous burnout, up to 50% of healthcare providers, doctors, and residents in training have a high burnout rate. And just because of the stress of how they're being asked to practice medicine. And so we're going to address that in this coming year's symposium. And I can give some information on how to look that up for anyone in the audience who might be interested in attending.
Yes, carry on.
Well, I believe, Linda, you did post our banner about the 2020 symposium. It will be held in Charleston, South Carolina, July the 17th through the 19th. Priority goes to the folks who are licensed practitioners, but a month before the symposium starts, if there are any seats available, we will open it to the public because the public may be interested in some of the lectures. For more information on that, there's a short URL that people can search or click on their browser, and it will give them information and ability to purchase tickets. And it's www.tinyurl.com/DOL-2020. So we call our symposiums Days of Learning, so that's where the DOL comes from. And then if you put -2020, that's the year. So that's the short version, but if you Google Priority Health Academy Functional Medicine Symposium, you'll be able to find it through an organic search. It's posted on several social media organizations, or if you go to your LDN Research Trust website, you'll see the banner also posted in your events page. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Linda, for posting that there.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Sure, that's just my little way of helping spread the word about naltrexone LDN. And we'll have a compounding pharmacist, Dr. Hamid Bakhtiar, who has he's a PharmD from North Carolina. He's going to be coming and speaking on LDN compounding and how it should be done correctly. And I will be giving a lecture on the updates on LDN, some of the research and what it's being used for successfully in some of our patients.
Well, we've run out of time, but thank you so much for having been our guest today, and we'll have to have you back another time.
Well, Linda, it's always a pleasure, and safe travels to the U.S. I understand you're coming here to visit.
Yes, I am. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Linda.
This show is sponsored by Mark Drugs, who specialize in the custom compounding of medications, assuring that the client gets the proper prescriptions for their unique needs and conditions. They work with practitioners, integrating knowledge and treatment of experts to create comprehensive health plans. Visit markdrugs.com or call Roselle 630-529-3400 or Deerfield 847-419-9898. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.